Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Nun. We will be going on Daf Kuf Mem Tes Amud Beis, 6 lines from the bottom. To quickly review what we discussed at the end of our previous shiur, the Mishnah, when we learned the halachas of Shchimera, taught us that if Shchimera gives away all of his assets and then he recovers, it's obvious that he gave away all of his assets only because he assumed that he was passing away. And now that he, Baruch Hashem, recovered, the gift that he gave away is voided. If, on the other hand, the Mishnah says he held on to karka kalshehu, the halacha is that is evidence that he's not giving away whatever he owns only because he's assuming that he's going to pass away. And therefore, there the halacha will be that even if he, Baruch Hashem, recovers, the halacha will be that he gives back, that what he had given away remains as is. And we learned in yesterday's shiur that when the Mishnah says the words karka, it doesn't specifically mean karka. It could also mean, we learned, metaltlin. That if he held on to metaltlin, that's what he's relying on, and therefore it's not considered a matanah shchimera. On the other hand, we learned in our previous Mishnah that when it says the word kalshehu, it doesn't mean specifically kalshehu. It means that there has to be enough left over that he should have what to live on, not just a kol shehu. And Rabbi Yosef asked on this interpretation of our Mishnah, because he asked that the Mishnah says the word karka, and now we're saying that karka doesn't mean karka. The karka can mean metatlin. And then he says our Mishnah says the word kol shehu, and now we're saying that kol shehu doesn't mean kol shehu, but kol shehu actually means more than a kol shehu. And he therefore didn't understand how we could learn pshat in the Mishnah this way. Amalei Abaya. So Abaya is now going to respond to each one of Rabbi Yosef's questions. For kol heicha de tani karka, do you want to indeed suggest that wherever the Mishnah uses the word karka, karka dafka, it must mean specifically land? I'll show you, says Abaya to Rabbi Yosef, places in the Mishnah, in Mishnayis, where the Mishnah uses the word karka, but doesn't mean specifically land. Because of Tanan, a Mishnah, Masech Tepeya, if somebody writes over all of his assets to his Eved, the halacha is Yotze Ben Chayrim. The Eved goes out free. And as the Rishonim explain, the Chiddush of this Mishnah is that when he writes Kol Nechasov, he means all of his assets, not most of his assets. The Chiddush of this Mishnah is that the Eved is included in those assets. And of course, the most commonly learned Chiddush of this Mishnah is that Gitoy V'yodoy Boim Ke'echod, and that the Eved goes out free because of that. Furthermore, the Paiskim discuss that here in the Mishnah says HaKoysev Kol Nechasov L'Avdoy, but the Gemara doesn't seem to indicate if he specified in this shtar what these assets are. And the question therefore comes up, if someone sells something to someone else and he writes a shtar, but it's ambiguous, he isn't clear about what is and isn't included in the sale, is the sale a valid sale? So even according to the opinions that say that you have to specify what is and isn't included in this sale, it's not specifically explained to Mefarshim a question, because Mefarshim explained, because it could be that the Eved in that case was well aware of what was included and what wasn't included. Furthermore, explained the Paiskim, it's only in a situation of a sale where I'm selling you something to you and I have to be specific what is and what isn't included in the sale. Because you're paying me, and you need to know what you are or aren't receiving in exchange for what you're paying me. But here we're referring to a situation where the person is writing over all of his nechosim to his eved, and since he's writing everything over to him, so he's giving him a gift. So whatever he gets, the eved is certainly going to be satisfied with, and there is no need to specify what is and what isn't included. However, in a situation of a sale, there the halacha is that it has to be specific, which is actually very relevant. La halacha lemaisa, point out the poskim. Rabbi Kivega makes this point on Pesach. On Pesach, when we sell our chametz to a goy, the shtar has to be clear in indicating what is and isn't included in the sale, what chametz we have, because it's a bill of sale, and as we're saying now, a bill of sale has to be specific. So here again, the Tanakhama says that if somebody wrote all of his assets over to his eved, the halacha is the eved is included in the sale, and therefore the eved is yoytze ben chayim, goes out free. However, shir karka kolshu, if when he wrote the shtar, he left over for himself, the owner left over for himself some property, the halacha is lo yotze ben chayim. According to the opinion of Tanakhama, the eved would not go out free under these circumstances. Rav Shimon Omer, Rav Shimon disagrees. El oylem ben chayim, the eved will always go out free. At shayimer, unless it says in the document, called nechosai nesunin leplanei avdei, I'm writing over all of my properties to my eved, chutz mi echem rebush ben, except 1/10,000. And as the Mefarshim explain, by writing except for 1/10,000, he's essentially saying that I don't want to let my eved go out free. And what is this word 1/10,000? He's actually, we could say, ridiculing David, that you are only worth to me 1/10,000th of my entire portfolio, and since I'm holding on to 1/10,000th, what I'm holding on to is actually you. That's how some Rishonim explain. Other Rishonim say that it's difficult to say that the owner is trying to ridicule the Eved, and what he means here is saying that in every item that I own, I want to retain ownership of 1/10,000th. But as long as he retains even ownership of 1/10,000th, that creates a situation that he hasn't totally freed the Eved, because he's held on to some of the Eved, and therefore the halacha will be that the Eved will not go out free. The Rishonim, there are many pshatim in the Rishonim in trying to understand this machloikis of the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon. Some Rishonim explain that since, according to the Tanakhama, since he held on to some karka, so that prevents this shtar shichur from being a total shtar shichur. It isn't a shtar that completely separates the owner from ownership. And any shtar shichur that doesn't completely separate the owner from ownership is not considered a valid shtar. That's how some Rishonim explain that the Tanakhama's opinion. Whereas Rav Shimon holds, if we know for sure that he freed the Eved, even though the owner kept some ownership for himself, it's going to be considered a valid shtar shichur. Rashi, the Tosfos HaRosh, take a different approach, that since the owner, according to the Tanakhama, that since the owner held on to some nechasim, maybe he meant to hold on to the Eved. And the Rambam actually takes this opinion one step further. He says that since Avodim, and we're going to discuss this more later in the Shir Be'ezer Hashem, are considered properties, we assume, or we have to assume according to the Tanakhama, that what he meant to hold on to property, he actually meant to hold on to the Eved, and therefore the Eved is not freed. Whereas Rav Shimon disagrees. Rav Shimon says Eved is not property, and if all he held on to it, all he held on to for himself is property, that will not be considered a situation that he meant not to free the Eved. However, in comments Rav Dimi by Yosef, Amar Belozer, Osma Tatlan Shiretz Levit, According to the Tanna Kamma, it's not only a situation where the owner held on to some land, will the halacha be that the eved doesn't go out. Even if he held on to some metaltlin, the Tanna Kamma will still have the same opinion. So what do we see from here? What we see from here is that using the word, that even though the Mishnah uses the word karka, it doesn't mean specifically karka. It means metaltlin, the same din that will apply by metaltlin. Only, says Rebbe Lazar, v'lo'os metaltlin shiretz ksuba. The halacha is, we're going to discuss this halacha, that if somebody gives all of his property to his sons, and he gives a small piece of property to his wife, she, by accepting this, forfeits her right to collect her ksuba from the property given to the sons. The fact that she didn't say anything shows that she agreed to this. However, that halacha only applies with two conditions. That it's specifically property that she got. Because since a ksuba is collected from property, it's only when she gets property do we say that she agreed not to collect the property that were given to the sons. But if she would give him a tautlin, that halacha would not apply. Furthermore, as we learned earlier in our Masechta, it's only when she received something do we say that she relinquished her right to collect the ksuba from the sons. But if she received nothing, even though she didn't say anything as her husband was doing this, we assume the reason she didn't say anything was because she didn't want to argue with her husband, but it wasn't that she was agreeing. But what we see again here is that the Mishnah there uses the word karka. It doesn't mean specifically karka. Furthermore, just to review something that we discussed previously, that even though we know there's a takonas ha-ga'onim, that nowadays a woman is entitled to collect her ksuba not only from karka of her husband, but even from a taplin owned by her husband, that takana only works for a benefit, not to a detriment. And therefore, if even Bizman Hazeh, after the takanas ha-ga'onim, if the husband will give metamplin to his sons and give karka to his sons and leave her with a piece of metamplin, that will not represent the situation that we assume that she relinquished her right to collect the ksuba from those properties. But again, the point's been made. Rabbi Yosef asked the kasha, how can we say that when our Mishnah used the word karka, it doesn't specifically mean karka? It can mean metamplin. Doesn't karka only mean karka, asks Rabbi Yosef? Says the Gemara, don't we see from the Mishnah Masechta Peya that the word karka can mean metamplin? Answers the Gemara. Says Rabbi Yosef, that Mishnah is not a question to me. Because hasam hu b'din d'loy lisni karka. Really, says Rabbi Yosef, correct. The Mishnah should not have used the word karka. However, b'ayda tani reisha, since in the reisha the Mishnah uses the word karka, and there it has to use the word karka, because in the dinim that are taught in the reisha of the Mishnah, it must be karka. That's why the Mishnah in the Sefer also uses the word karka when it doesn't specifically mean karka, when it means even metaplin. Because it says in the reisha, kiva aimer, karka kosru chayes b'pei b'kurim. Even if somebody owns a small piece of land, he's mechuyev to get paid from that piece of land, and mechuyev to bring b'kurim from that land. Well, lichtav leim prosbel, to write a prosbel. As we've discussed many times, a prosbel means that the Torah says that Shemitah cancels all loans. Machlokes Rishonim, most Rishonim say that it's at the end of the Shemitah year when the loans are cancelled. The Rosh's opinion is that Shemitah loans are cancelled at the beginning of the Shemitah year. So Hillel saw that people were refraining from lending money to each other because they knew Shemitah would come, and Shemitah would cancel all loans. So to avoid this problem, Hillel instituted a prosbel. That somebody owes somebody else money, they write a prosbel, and by writing a prosbel, which the malva is actually giving over the debt to Bezdin, and a debt that's given over to Beis Din is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. However, says the Mishnah, a prosbul is only effective if the loiva owns property. And machloikus rishonim, why is a prosbul only effective when the loiva owns property? Rashi, other rishonim learn, because it's only common that a person will lend money to somebody who has property from which he could collect back his loan. And even if Hillel wanted to institute a prosbul, he only instituted it in a situation which is common, which means that the loiva has property. Other Rishonim explain, as we have learned many times, when a loiva has property, there's a shibud, and he borrows money from the malva, a shibud is put on his property. And since a shibud is put on the property, in essence we could say that the malva already, to some degree, has collected his loan. He's collected his loan because he has a mortgage on the property of the loiva. But such a mortgage only exists if the loiva has property. And that's why a prosbul is effective. And as the Ran says, what's the nafgamina between these two pshatim? What will be the halacha if the loiva has property at the time that the loan was made, but not property when Shemitah comes? If we say that's because it's the commonality of the loan, if the loiva has property or not, so we look at the time when the loan was done. If we have a look that it's considered as if it's paid up because the loiva has property on which the malva has a mortgage, then that has to be when Shemitah comes, not when the loan was initiated. The Mishnah continues there, Masech Tepeiah, to say, we'll look at some Nechashim She'en L'Chrayis B'Kesef B'Shtar U'B'Chazaka. The halacha is that karka can be sold B'Kesef Shtar B'Chazaka. Metatlin cannot. However, there is something known as a Kinyan Agav. A Kinyan Agav means that if I sell you property, Agav, the property, metatlin, can be sold, even though one of the normal methods of kinyonim, of metatlin, will not be used. So even if you have just karka kol shehu, the halacha is that you can make a kinyon agav. It's interesting to note that I saw that the Paiskim discuss, our Gemara is discussing the halacha of kinyon on karka. We know that the halacha is, the law is, that when somebody sells property, it has to be registered. It has to be registered. It has to be deed registered. What would be the halacha if one individual sells property to another individual, but it wasn't properly registered with the authorities? Would that be considered a halachically valid sale? The Sefer Mishnah Yosef says, clearly not. Since the law is that no sale of property can be considered final unless it was written, unless it was properly registered, even if you did all the kinyonim that we've learned in these mesechtes, the kinyon would not be a valid kinyon. However, I saw from Rabbi Yoshev, it's a little hard to understand what he's saying. He's saying that if both the seller and the buyer agree that the sale should be considered a final sale, but even though it hasn't been registered, he says we have a mixas kinyon. We have some sort of a kinyon. What exactly he means with a mixas kinyon, I'm not sure, but that's what he paskins. But since all of the dinim in the reisha, says Rabbi Yosef, refer where it says karka, it means karka. Therefore, even in the sefer, Mishamachi, in the sefer also, does the Mishnah use the word karka, even though it doesn't mean, even though there, as we learned earlier, doesn't mean specifically karka, it can mean even metatlin. Rav Yosef had another question. Our Mishnah said that if the Shchimara leaves for himself a kol shehu, but yesterday we learned that a kol shehu doesn't mean a kol shehu. A kol shehu means kedei panasasoi. He has to really leave enough to live on. And again, Rav Yosef had a problem. Here the Mishnah says the word kol shehu, and we're saying it doesn't mean specifically kol shehu. Ask the Gemara, is Rabbi Yosef correct that kol hech de tani kol shehu, wherever the Mishnah used the words kol shehu, less le shura, there is no shir? But tonight, the Mishnah says in Masechta Chulin, we know that one of the matnas kahuna is reishis hageiz. the first shearings of wool from the sheep had to be given to the Kohen. And the Mishnah discusses what is the shear of Reishis HaGeiz. Reb Dois ben HaKunis Oima, Chomesh Rechelos, you have to have five sheep, Goizos Mona Mono Pras, with each sheep having a mona and a half of wool. That's when Chayovis Bereishis HaGeiz, the din of Reishis HaGeiz applies. The Chom disagree, and they say Chomesh Rechelos, Goizos Kol Shehen. Even a Kol Shehu is Chayv Reishis HaGeiz. Vamrinan, and the Gemara says, Kama Kol Shehen, what is the definition of Kol Shehen? Amar Rav, and Rav explained, Mono Upras, a Mono Upras altogether, without Shehen Mechumashes, which means like this, you have to have five sheep that all together will produce a Mono and a half of wool, but each sheep has to give 20%, has to be able to produce 20% of that number. That's when there's a chiv erashis hageiz. Actually, the Rishonim say, since we know throughout halakha there's a concept of efshel tzamtzum, it's impossible to be exact, the halakha will be that they really have to give a little more than 20% each. But the question here is that here the word kol shehu is used, and yet it has a shear. So why is Rabbi Yosef asking an our Mishnah where the Mishnah says kol shehu, and we say that doesn't mean specifically kol shehu? Answers the Gemara, Rabbi Yosef says there's no question from that Mishnah. Hasim bedin dehu deloy listening kol shehu. Says Rabbi Yosef, you are correct. When the Rabbanan say their opinion, they should not have used the word kol shehu, because the word kol shehu means even the most minimal amount. And the Rabbanan hold that there is a shear for Reishis HaGeiz. Just, I did the Kamer. Tanakama Shur Rabba, since the Tanakama said such a large shear, there's such a wide disparity between the shear of the Tanakama and the shear of Rabbi Yosef. So Ami Iunami Shear Zutra, and the Chacham say shear, which is so much smaller than the shear that the Tanakama said. So to point out the difference, the significant difference that exists between the opinion of the Tanakama and the opinion of the Chachamim, that's why Karloi Kol Shehu. That's why the Mishnah uses the word Kol Shehu. But it shouldn't have used the word Kol Shehu, because Rabbi Yosef suggests that the word Kol Shehu is only appropriate when it is indeed a Kol Shehu. Says the Gemara, Pshita, it's obvious that if somebody says Matatli Leplanya, I'm giving all my movable items to somebody, he means kol meina tashmishtei. He means to include all utensils. Levar mechiti sorry. He doesn't mean to include food. Food is not considered a utensil or a movable item. If he added the word kol matatul leplanya, by adding the word kol, he obviously is trying to include something else. So we say he's adding a fil chit v'sarit. Not only does he mean wheat and barley, says the Gemara, the mill was constructed of two stones, an upper stone and a lower stone. The upper stone is much more movable than the lower stone. So we say that the upper stone, which is not typically really moved, but again here, because he used the word kol, that is included. But the Rechaim HaTachtoina, the lower stone, which is typically not moved, it's much more firm in its place, will not be included. If he used even more, used broader language, he said, kol de metaltun, then we'll say, friat, chayim atachtoni koine. Even the bottom stone is included. Iboilhu. Now, however, ask the Gemara, avde kamakarka kamakataltli domi. When somebody uses the words karka, or if somebody uses the word karka or metaltlin, in which categories are avadim included? So, the way the Rashbam explains the Gemara's question is that the Gemara's question is Loshem Nei Adam. We know that we use the terminology used by people in determining the definition of a document. And now the Gemara wants to know, what is the Loshem Nei Adam? How do people refer to Avodim? Tosfos, however, explains the Gemara as follows. As far as the Daraisa, when it's referring to situations, Dinim Daraisa, certainly, since we know the pasuk says v'snachalta moysan levnechem, avodim hukshu l'karkos, so certainly avodim have the din like karka. The Gemara's question is regarding the rabbanan diga situations. What do we say? In what category do avodim belong? Amalei Rav Acha Barei Derav Avila Rav Ashi Toshma Hamoichas Eir. If somebody sells a city without specifying what was included in the sale, Moch Batim Sichem Aris Mechatzos, including the sale of the houses, the pits, the bathhouses, or Beis Abadim, Beis Hashochem, different types of fields, fields that need irrigation, fields that don't need irrigation, Avloyas Metaltim. Metaltim are not included in the sale. However, Ubizman Shomar, if he said, Hu V'chol Mashe B'toichai, then the halach is, Hafilahoi B'behema Avodim, even animals and slaves are, Harikulam Mechurim, are all included in the sale. Now, says the Gemara, I'm Bishlom K'metatl Dami, if we say that Avodim have the status like Metatlin, B'shemachi, we could well understand why L'mizdabin B'reisha. Why, when he sold the city, are slaves not included in the sale? Eli Amrit, K'makarka Dami, it will say that slaves are always considered like Karka, Amayla Mizdabin. Why, when he sold the city, are the Avodim not included in the sale? Elamai, says the Gemara, so this is what you want to use as a proof, that Avodim K'matatli Dami, are considered like Matatlin. Ask the Gemara, but then we need to understand the word afilu. The word afilu means to say that it's some sort of a chiddush. That when he includes the metaltalin, the avodim are included. What's the chiddush? If we're saying that avodim are in the category of metaltalin, obviously when he sold metaltalin, avodim are included. Elamayis lechmeima. How can we explain the difference between metaltalin and all other avodim and all other metaltalin? Shani metaltalin the night, metaltaloi night. Usually, a metaltalin is movable, but somebody has to move that metaltalin. Whereas, avodim, obviously, a human beings can move on themselves. So therefore, we could suggest, a filotema, we could say that avodim are kimakarkadami, are considered in the category of karka. However, shani mekarkadanaidi, mekarkadalainaidi, avodim are considered in the karka, but when somebody sold the city, he only meant to sell karka that can't move. Avodim, even if they're in the category of karka, can move on their own, and therefore, that's why the Mishnah has to say that not included when the city was sold, that unless it was specified that included in the sale is Hiv Kamash B'taycham. Amalei, so the Gemara is still trying to understand what category do Avodim belong in. Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Toshma, Hakosif. The Gemara, the din that we began the shiur with today is the halacha yotz ben chayim. The eved goes out free. However, shiur karka kolshu lo yotz ben chayim. We won't repeat the explanation of the machloikus tanakam Rav Shimon. We said at the beginning of our shiur. Rav Shimon Omer lo yotz ben chayim. Ach yomer kol nechosai nesun l'plani avdi. It is an effective shtar chutz me'echem ribush behen. Von Rav Dimon by Yosef Omer Belazer. Chazal said that if somebody held back metaplin, then the Eved will not go out free, according to the opinion of the Chachamim. But by the din of a woman receiving ksuba, if the husband gave away metaplin, didn't give her karka, that din, then the din is that she doesn't forfeit her right to collect from the property that the husband gave to the sons. Vamlei Ravala Rav Nachman, my Tatlin, my Tama, what is the reason why are Matatlin treated regarding Avodim in one way and regarding Ksuba in another way? Says the Avdim Matatlahu, because Avodim are in the category of Matatlin, and therefore Matatlin and Matatlin, if Avodim and Matatlin, and the husband and the owner retains some ownership of the metatlin, that's why it's considered that the shtar, he left himself ownership in the avodim, and that's why as the avodim will not go out free. However, ksubas ish mekarkahu, the ksuba is only collected from karka, metatlin karka will have a shiur, and therefore if the husband gave her only metatlin, that will not show that she has no right to collect the ksuba payment. But what do we see here clearly? That avodim are in the category of metatlin, says the Amalei, and not mishum delav kros gita mislin olam. The issue over there, says the Gemara, is not if avodim are in the category of metatlin or not. It's an entirely different issue. One, it's not a shtar, because Because there we have a shtad that doesn't completely separate the husband, the owner, from the eved. And the Rishonim have a number of ways of explaining the Gemara. One explanation is that since the shtar says that he's still going to retain ownership of something, for a shtar shichur to be considered an effective shtar shichur, it has to be a shtar that completely separates the owner. If there's anything in the shtar that proves that the owner still retains ownership of something, that is not a valid shtar shichur. Others say that since the shtar isn't clear in freeing the eved, he didn't completely separate himself, because as we learned earlier, maybe by saying that he's holding on to something, he still wants to hold on to the eved. Or as other Rishonim explain, since the shtar begins with the words kol nechasai, I'm giving you all my nechasim, and then afterwards the owner retains some ownership, so obviously the shtar is not correct, because the words kol nechasai are incorrect. Even as the Rishonim point out, everything points in the direction that he did want to free the slave, still, since for a shtar shichur to be effective, it has to be krisis, it has to affect a total freedom, and a total that nothing is retained by the owner, and this shtar doesn't accomplish that, that's why this shtar is an ineffective shtar. But it doesn't have anything to do with the issue if an eved is in the category of karko metaplin. The Gemara now will speak about different gifts which have a special din. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Nachman, Chamisha, there are five situations of gifts that the halacha is at sheichtuv kol nechaseyim, that the gifts are only valid if everything is being given away. And the Gemara will list them and then explain each one individually. Ve'elen shchimera, avdoi, ishtoi, ubonov, mavreches. Shchimera, the case of shchimera is the tanan. It's our sugya, what we learned in the Mishnah. The shchimera shekasa kol nechasov lacherim. If the shchimera wrote over all of his assets to someone else, if shir karka kolshu, if he retains for himself some assets, so that shows that he meant to give it away under all circumstances, therefore even if Baruch Shem he recovers, matanosa kayamas, the gift is considered still standing. However, if loy shir karka kolshu, if the shchimera didn't leave anything for himself, so it's obvious that the reason he wrote away all of his assets is because he assumes he's passing away, and therefore the halacha is if he recovers, Baruch Hashem, Eimat Tanos Kiyomis, what he gave away doesn't stand. Avdoi, the Tanan, as we just have been learning, Hakoysev kol nechosov la'avdoi, Yotz ben Chayrim, then that's indeed evidence free. However, if Shir Kaka Koshu, then the Shtar is not a valid Shtar, and La Yotz ben Chayrim. Ishtoi, what is the case of Ishtoi? Domer Yudah Mishmul, as we learned in the previous parak, Hakoysev kol nechosov l'Ishtoi, if somebody writes a will, and he writes that he's writing over all of his assets to his wife, so since, as we learned, no one would write over all of his assets to his wife without leaving anything for his children, we assume that since he did this, what he only meant to do was, he only meant to appoint her to be the administrator of the estate. Bonov, the Tanan, Hakosov, Kol Nechosov Lebonov, if somebody writes over all of his property to his sons, the Kosov Lishta Kaka Kosu, and he writes a piece of property to his wife, then if the Ksubasa. However, if this then only applies if he gave to his son everything, if he didn't write over to his sons everything, if he retained something for himself, then we say that even though she didn't say anything as he did it, it didn't mean that she meant to relinquish her right to collect the ksuba, because we say that since the husband kept some property for herself, that's what she assumed she could collect from, and if that property won't be there or won't be enough to cover the cost of the ksuba, she'll have a right to collect the balance or the entire value of the ksuba from the properties that were given to her son. Only when the husband gave away all of his possessions does this apply. Mavreches. What is the case of Mavreches? Do'oma mar. Mavreches tzrich shtichtas kol nechoseha. The din of Mavreches refers to a situation where a woman was married once and she, her husband died, and she before, and she has property, but she doesn't want her husband to get her property, so she goes and she writes over her property to someone else in order that it should not be considered her property, that the husband should have rights to, the husband should have rights to. And now when the husband indeed dies or divorces her, even though when she gave this gift to this other party, she did not indicate she's only giving it to keep this property away from her husband, the halacha is that it's still going to be considered that they have to give it back the property. When does the din of Mavreches apply, says the Gemara? Only if she gave away all of her property. If not, it's not considered a circumstance of Mavreches. And again, as we've discussed previously, why is a Mavreches, even though she didn't say anything to this, of the sort, when she gave away a property, do we say she only meant to give it away to get it out of the husband's reach? Isn't this Dvarim Shebelev, that we know the halach is Dvarim Shebelev Einim Dvarim? So Rishonim explain, one tarif they give is that when it's an umdin the muchach, when it's obvious that this was her goal, there we don't say Dvarim Shebelev Einim Dvarim. Furthermore, say to Rishonim, Dvarim Shebelev Einim Dvarim is a concern when we have two individuals, a buyer and a seller. So if I sold you something, and I had something in mind, but I didn't stipulate it, so you, the buyer, could say, if that's what you meant, that's what you should have said. You should have spoken it out when you sold it. But here we're not talking about a buyer and a seller. Here we're referring to a situation where she's giving away her assets. So it's totally her decision on her own. That's where we can rely on her umdana, and we don't say dvarim shebelev einim dvarim. The Rishonim also debate. As we've said, the purpose of a mavreches is that if her husband will, that if her husband divorces her or dies, she gets back these assets. What will be the halacha, however, if she dies before her husband? What will be the din of these assets? There are many different opinions in Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that those assets will remain in the hands of the person she gave them to as a gift. Other Rishonim say that in that circumstance, the husband, who is, as we learned previously, the Yorish of his wife, will get the assets. Because they explain, the entire reason why we say the Mavreches doesn't want her husband to have reach of those assets is only because she's concerned that he'll die before her or he'll divorce her, and she needs those assets to live on. But here, where she died before him, so that concern doesn't exist, therefore he will indeed become the owner of those assets. And even in this opinion of the Rishonim, there's a further machlokes, to what degree will he become the owner of those assets? Some Rishonim say that after she dies, the people who she had given those assets to have to now turn them over to her husband. But the peiros that they ate from these assets till she died, they will be able to keep. Other Rishonim suggest that not only will they have to turn over those assets to the husband, but they will even have to give the husband the peiros of those assets, because those assets really belong to him all along. The Gemara said that the Gemara just identified these five gifts, and the Gemara said the common denominator of all these five gifts is that you have to give away everything. And in every one of these cases, metatlin is considered a significant holding back, just like land. And if you didn't give away all the metatlin, doesn't mean you gave everything. Except in the situation of ksuba, the mekarka tekin rabbanon, it's Chazal said that a woman ksuba is a lien on her husband's land, but not on metatlin. However, says a Maimer, metatlin the ksiva b'ksuba, if metaltlin were written into the ksuba, visne benayu, and they're still here, have a shear, they're considered a shear. If this ksuba document specifies certain metaltlin, the woman could collect for, which the woman could collect for ksuba, then the woman could collect ksuba from them. And therefore, if the husband who wrote the property to his sons awarded these movables, these metaltlin, to his wife, again, this will be considered a situation as if he gave her land. And just like we said, in a case where he gave her land, we assume she forfeited her right to collect the ksuba. Similarly, if he gives her these metaltlin, which are metaltlin that are actually written into the ksuba, she will have forfeited her ksuba. Say the Rishonim, again back to the Takanos Kohen that we spoke about previously, that nowadays a woman is allowed to collect her ksuba for the metaltlin. Still, as we said earlier, even if the husband left her even if the husband gave her metaltlin, but it's not metaltlin that were written into the ksuba, they won't have the same din as the metaltlin that were mentioned in this Gemara. And the halacha will be that just because they gave her metaltlin doesn't mean that she forfeited her right to the ksuba. Amma, if somebody said, Nechasei leploini, I'm giving this person my possessions. Avda, ikri nechasei. Avadim certainly are considered in the category of possessions. The Tanan, as we've been learning the Mishnah, Hakaisav kal nechasev of Adav, Yosef ben Chayim. So you see that nechasev includes the Eved. Ara, land, ikri nechasei. The Tanan, as we also learned earlier in our share, Nechasim Sheyesh L'Mechrayis, Nikna B'Kesav B'Shtar B'Chazaka. So why is it called Nechasim Sheyesh L'Mechrayis? Property, land. Glima, garments, Ikri Nechasim. The Tanan, Sheyesh L'Mechrayis, Eni Nikna El B'Mashicha. Nechasim Sheyesh L'Mechrayis is done through Mashicha. And there, the Gemara is referring, the Mishnah is referring to clothing. Again, the Rishonim say it's not specifically clothing, it's all types of vessels and utensils. Clothing is just the most common metatlin. Zuzi, ikri nechasi. Zuzim, akor nechasim. Tetnan, v'she'en lemechrayis. Nechas v'she'en lemechrayis. Niktim v'nechas v'she'en lemechrayis. B'kesef, b'shtar b'chazaka. And what that means is that kesef could be acquired that way. Even though, as we learned, the kesef cannot be acquired through chalipin, it can be acquired through kinyan agaf. Ki od rapapa, havlei treis alfa zuzu bechazoi. Rapapa had 12,000 dinars deposited with somebody in the town of Chazoi. And it was difficult for Rapapa to travel to Bechazoi to get his money. But the people in Bechazoi, if Rav Papa would send a shliach to pick up the money, would not want to give it to that shliach. In the case of our Gemara, Rav Shmuel was the shliach. Because they were concerned that if something would happen to the money as the shliach was coming back, they would be held responsible. So what Rav Papa did, he knew Rav Shmuel Bar Ach was going to Bechazoi, so he wanted to give Rav Shmuel ownership of this property, of this money. So what he did was, Iknin Leilei Rav Shmuel Ba'ach Agav Asif Debeisei. He made a kinyan agav to Rav Shmuel on this money. And like this, Rav Shmuel became now the owner of this money. And since he became the owner of the money, now the people who were holding the money were not be concerned to give Rav Shmuel the money, because they knew that Rav Shmuel is now the owner of the money and their liability is over. And then, ki asa nafal apay tavach. When Rav Shmuel came back, Rav Papa went out to greet him up till Tavach, which was halfway to greet him. Why did he go out to greet him? Pash pshat, as he went to pick up his money. Another pshat is that he didn't want that Rav Shmuel should start thinking that the money is his. And therefore, he, and maybe when he would come to the house and take ownership. He would come to the house and take ownership of the house. And included in taking ownership of the house would be ownership of the money. So her papa wanted to avoid that from happening. So he purposely went out to greet him before Rav Shmuel could reach the house. Again, a very difficult pshat, because it sort of suggests that Rav Papa didn't really trust the great Rav Shmuel. So I saw another pshat was that the reason Rav Papa went out was they were so happy because he made a chiddush, he came up with a chiddush in halacha. And when somebody comes up with a chiddush in Torah, a Talmud Chacham, when he comes up to a chiddush in Torah, is overjoyed. And he wanted to show everybody how happy he was that he used his learning to come up with a solution, that he went out to Tavach, that everybody should recognize the joy that he had for coming up a chiddush in halacha.